Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Voice of Tangaroa is a collaboration between New Zealand Geographic and RNZ. Reporting for this series is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air.
We've just stepped on board the Polaris in Deep Cove in Doubtful Sound, and it's been pouring all night, and the waterfalls, like this whole bay is just waterfalls. It's stunning.
The Polaris is the University of Otago's scientific research vessel, and all day the team has been busy collecting mud and water.
Yeah, that'll work.
Mud. Soft mud, yeah.
Good consistency.
Yeah, good consistency. The core should have no problem going.
It looks like a cow patch.
They sound pretty excited about some mud. And what do you mean it looks like a cow pat?
Well, it's kind of this dark, globby texture. And yeah, when I first saw it, that's what it reminded me of. But some of the other mud from a bit deeper down is even blacker and silkier. And I decided it actually looked quite delicious. Think like dark chocolate ganache. The cow pat stuff came from a test run they do before they grab the actual sediment samples. That's done with a piece of equipment called a multicorer, which looks like a moon lander with some plastic tubes on the bottom to collect the samples.
Basically what they're doing is they're very softly taking the absolute top layer.
Adele Heinemann is one of the crew on board, one of the skippers. We're watching as the multicorer is being prepared. It's a relatively new, very expensive piece of tech for the team.
Last year was its maiden voyage and there was a lot of issues with it not deploying. This year they'd had 100% success rate until you guys come on board.
Whoops, sorry about that.
I had only done about 4 or 5, you know, we're talking relative.
Classic. It was all working just fine until the journalist and photographer showed up.
Yeah. Well, it's a 3-week expedition and they'll be dropping the multicorer a dozen times in 4 different fjords, so they'll have a few more chances.
Slow down a bit of doubt.
Next time it gets winched back up.
Oh,
everything has gone to plan.
Hold there.
And I want to explain more about this mud. But first, maybe I should give some more context.
Blue carbon basically refers to the process where carbon is drawn down from the atmosphere and taken into the marine environment.
This is Dr. Rebecca McLeod, a marine ecologist based at the University of Otago and the chair of the Fiordland Marine Guardians. I caught up with her first at the holiday park in Tiano the evening before we headed into Fiordland together.
The process of capturing the carbon dioxide in the first place is done by the plants, whether those are like seagrass or mangroves or seaweeds or like phytoplankton, little microalgae. That's kind of the process of capturing that carbon. But then when it sinks and is buried in the seafloor, that's when it's locked away forever. Well, we hope, all for long time scales.
So fjords are not the only candidate when we think about how good marine environments are at storing carbon. There's also wetlands, mangrove forests, seagrass meadows and estuaries, even seaweed if it can get buried before it decays. But fjords do seem to be the champs.
They're so supercharged that they just really punch above their weight when it comes to carbon burial.
And even in this category of champs, Fiordland's fjords are a cut above the rest.
We took some scientists in that work in fjords all around the world just a couple of months ago, and I haven't visited many other fjords around the world, so I just figured, you know, maybe Patagonia, maybe Scotland, that'll kind of be like our fjords. But these guys, their minds were just blowing in front of us, and they were just like, if you were going to design a system to bury carbon, it would look like Fiordland.
Hell yeah, go Fiordland. How good is it? And what makes it so good?
Well, exactly how good Fiordland is at storing carbon is one of the key questions that Rebecca and the team are trying to answer. From atmospheric observations, there's an estimate that between 10 and 20% of New Zealand's carbon emissions are being captured by Fiordland's forests and fjords each year.
That's a pretty hefty chunk.
Yeah, especially since it's such a small part of our coastline. As to what makes it so good, it's a combination of things. And I was lucky enough to experience one of the main contributing factors.
It's still raining. It's been raining for 2 days straight, I think.
Associate Professor Chris Moy is the expedition lead and an earth scientist at the University of Otago. It's right on dusk, and we're standing on the deck of the Polaris in Hall Arm, off Doubtful Sound, looking around at the sodden scene before us.
It's breathtaking, right? The parts that you can see on the margin, the hillside here is just covered with water. Like every kind of bare area essentially has water running down it.
Yeah, and the kind of amazing thing about it is that like that it does directly play into your research as well, because you can see that carbon is coming down with that water, right?
Indeed, yeah. So you know that it's bringing soil, it's bringing plant material. If it really is like a strong storm or a strong rainfall event, or where there's a high amount of precipitation in a short period of time, then we could even get trees coming in, you know, so it definitely scales.
Between 6 and 10 meters of rain falls in Fjordland each year, maybe even more in some spots.
So we have the rainfall, and that's driving this temperate rainforest that we see here. And then on top of that, we have, you know, the geology, the tectonics, and we have a large strike slip fault that's coming into Milford Sound, or just to the north and west of Milford Sound, the Alpine Fault. And so we have this element of shaking that's kind of shaking all this carbon.
That's good for carbon storage, is it?
Yeah, there's that. That's one component. But, you know, we were going through, as we were driving into Hall Arm, and we can see some of these evidence of past slips. And what's really remarkable to me is that kind of the regeneration of vegetation is really quick. And so that's part of the Fjordland carbon story. That's quite unique that you get, you know, these events, either an extreme climate event, like a big rainfall event that washes away, and that brings all this organic material into the fjord. Or we have these earthquakes that dislodge material and send it all in. And so these are ways to really quickly advect this carbon into the fjords. And then we also have these suboxic kind of fjord basins that are working to try to preserve a lot of that carbon.
Okay, so it's the combo of heavy rainfall that allows trees to thrive and grow, then landslides and earthquakes that shakes material loose from steep hills, so it falls into the fjords and sinks, and then it's back to the rain, which allows fast regeneration of the forest, pulling in more carbon.
That's it.
But what's the last thing he said? Suboxic fjord basins. What are those?
Well, microbes like bacteria love to eat plant material. When they break it down, they release the carbon back into the atmosphere. But they need oxygen to do this. And in the fjords, the oxygen concentration on the seafloor varies. Chris is particularly excited about the suboxic and anoxic basins, places with little to no oxygen. Generally, these are the deep troughs close to the heads of the fjords, the land end. Away from the sea, not much circulation happens, and so they're low on oxygen.
Some that are quite restricted and don't get kind of fresh Tasman seawater for a long period of time. They kind of have like stinky old water in them, I've heard people refer to it. And then others that are refresh quite frequently.
But the stinky old water is quite good for preserving the carbon.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed it is. And certainly the mud that you pull out of that, it looks really unique when you sample these basins. It looks really, really black. It's got lots of organic material. Organic material, even that you can recognize, like leaves from the surrounding forest, sticks, branches, all types of debris essentially derived from land, and it's being sequestered in these basins.
Like the stuff we saw today, do you mean?
Indeed.
Yeah.
So some good examples from Deep Cove and then here in Hall Arm as well.
I found it really satisfying to look at. Like, I should have run, I wanted to run my fingers through it.
You didn't
like,
do that.
I should.
We have to do that before we...
It looks like so silky and so
tomorrow
black
morning,
and
indeed.
Like... Mm.
You can get some areas that are, when you get closer to the rivers, that might have a little bit more sand and grit in it. Mm-hmm. But the ones that are deeper and farther from the margins of the fjord are super silky and smooth.
So back to the mud chat, hey.
It's what this expedition's all about. Some of what they collect smells too, that typical Rotorua smell. It's because the anoxic mud is home to a different sort of bacteria that thrive without oxygen and don't release the carbon, but instead produce sulfur. The samples they're collecting will allow them to make a carbon sequestration map of the fjords. Here's Rebecca again.
Are there some fjords or some parts of the fjords that bury carbon faster than others? Like, are that right up in the heads of the fjords? Is that more important than out at the entrance? How much carbon are they burying in the fjords that comes from the forest versus stuff that is generated in the marine environment, like seaweeds and microalgae and things like that?
They also take longer, deeper cores to enable them to look back in time.
You can analyse back down through that sediment core and start to reconstruct like what the ocean conditions have been like.
The goal is to understand what might happen as our climate changes. Will it impact circulation in the fjords, affect the anoxic conditions and disrupt carbon burial, perhaps even releasing tons of it into the atmosphere? Are there other human activities that could turn the fjords from a carbon sink to a source? So far, one of the great things about Fiordland is that it's been left relatively untouched. It was established as a national park in 1952, and then protection in the sea followed, mainly thanks to the Fiordland Marine Guardians, a collection of fishers, tourism operators, locals, and Rebecca herself.
That group established 10 marine reserves throughout the Fiordland Marine area and did some really innovative stuff with fisheries management in there and a few other bits and pieces to protect important parts of the seafloor. And again, that was really visionary stuff and quite ahead of its time. But when you combine the marine protection with the national park protection and you get this full sort of holistic system that has really high levels of protection, they wouldn't have even thought about the mud at that point. And they collectively, those pieces of work have managed to save this amazing natural asset that is helping our world.
It's like it's been doing all this invisible labour for us all along.
Yeah. We just
didn't notice.
No, we just were floating around and going, oh, look at the beautiful mountains.
That was freelance science journalist Kate Evans. This episode was produced by Kate and me, Claire Kincannon, with help from Ellen Rikers, Brianna Juretich and Phil Vine. Sound engineering was by William Saunders and music was by Greens. Voice of Tangaroa is a collaboration between RNZ and New Zealand Geographic. Reporting for the series is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air. Tēnā koe I whakarongo mai. Thanks so much for listening. Ko Claire Kincannon ahau, mā te wā.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.